You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Get the first aid kit!
Do me a favor and don't be dead.
Whoa, does he need CPR? Because I totally know CPR.
Where did he come from?
You all right?
I'm up!
Yeah, we can tell you're hammered. It's pretty obvious.
Oh my God, Eric, look at this. We have to move quickly before this all changes.
Jane, we have to take him to the hospital.
Father!
He's fine, look at him.
I'm down! I know you can hear me, open the Bifrost!
Hospital, you go, I'll stay.
You, what realm is this? Alfheim? Nornheim?
New Mexico?
You dare threaten me, Thor, with so puny a...
What? He was freaking me out!
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Lesbian and Scott!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually 129 for the 23rd of April 2011. And we've got a hum coming from Celine's microphone. What is
that?
I think it's touching your laptop.
Is that better?
That's better.
A little better. Weird. It's the laptop on the desk. It's picking up the fan.
I can just go like this for the whole show.
How about we do this? Sorry, this is all a bit chaotic, but this is why you watch us live. Because you never know what's going to happen. I am David.
Should we start again?
No. What the hell? We're live. It's Easter. Still hearing it through the box too.
Why are you making so much noise?
I don't know. We don't usually get sort of sounds like that. All right. I'm David McVeigh. This is Josh Philpott. That's Celine Roberts. How are you, Celine? Long time
well,
no see.
Thank you.
We will try and futz our way through this, but you may have to kill your laptop. Oh, hello. Just stopped.
Yep.
Oh no, it's back.
Yeah, I know, but
what should just stop.
Focus on the show, David.
This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of Geek Actually Network. This week, we are going to review the superhero film Thor, which for our American listeners is a bit of a privilege because you guys don't get it until May.
I don't know whether it's a privilege or a curse, really.
Or a tease. One of them. We could get rid of this clock at the top of our screen, can't we? There we go. All right, so the clock's been on all day. We are also going to spin a few new trailers, talk a little bit of film news, deliver a brand new list of five comic books we want to see on screen. There's been a lot of comic book adaptations, but there's still an awful lot of comic books out there, and there's a few that we actually want to see. You're really frustrated by that, aren't you?
No. The fan will turn off.
Oh, it's the fan. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll keep our ears open for that. If you hear a hum, it's the fan of a laptop on the table. We might have to get a pad for your fan, for your laptop in general. Okay. Before we get on to all of this goodness, though, we do want to say, for all those who are celebrating Easter, a happy Easter to you. For those who just have the public holidays off, good for you.
And for those of you who don't, sucked in.
All right, so have a happy Easter. Now, just a very quick note, normally we wouldn't do a show on a public holiday weekend, but this is a very special show because we have to do Thor, and Thor is like very geeky. So we are actually going to take next Saturday off in lieu of the public holiday. and so therefore there will not be a film actually next week. We'll be back the following week after that. We're coming back with the film Source Code, is our first film back. So next weekend there won't be a film actually, just to let you know. But before we get on with our show proper, we do like to do a little bit of feedback, and we have quite a lot of feedback this week. We'll see if we can cut through some of this really quickly. First one we have here is from last show, which I don't need to go into again. There we go. All right, first one we have is from Chris from Bris Vegas, who says, "Hi there, guys. Missed the live show this week because I promised the kids I'd take them to see Hop. Don't bother."
Well, there we go.
There's a review and a half for you. So I caught the show on my iPod instead, which we're an audio show, so that's fine. You inspired me to track down Koyaanisqatsi. Dave, I just have two words for you. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So if you haven't seen Koyaanisqatsi, definitely go see it. Chris, you are welcome. Mike from Canada writes, "Word up, Josh and then Dave." In response to a comment from last week's show, it was not a euphemism. I actually was making cookies, and they were delicious. He says, I'd send you guys some, but you're disqualified. Hope that.
Aww. Oh, snap.
Says, hope that hurt a little. I know it hurts me every time. Felt the same way about Paul. Didn't think the ending had so many references. I only got the big one in the end. There's actually a lot. Go back and watch a bunch of 70s sci-fi. You'll see those references all over the place. Not a euphemism, he says. Thought you guys could break out a top five film homages list at some point. That's a great idea.
That's a great
and
list,
and we will
dude.
Do that at some point. We've got a couple backed up now that we're going to have to pull out of the bag. I also have been working, just so you know, I've been working on my list of sophomore directors. Because that's actually Source Code's list. So I've already started working on that one. That's an interesting list.
Shit, I have to get to that.
Also just caught the Thor interview. Dave, you were great. Thank you very much. My head's really big now. Even though you asked the typical, were you a fan of the comics? Of course we're going to ask that question. Look, the problem with a junket is you're only going to be allowed to ask certain questions. You're not going to get deep. The question is, the trick is to try and get something different out of them.
Yep.
Oh, and that, and you only get enough of what, like a 10-minute.
We had a 10-minute block. Yeah.
And
he actually weighed me down on the 1 and the 2-minute things. And when we finally got the tapes, it was only 9 minutes. He actually cut me short a minute. But anyway,
son of a bitch.
No, Paramount, you guys rock, okay? And Way Too Blue, you guys rock too. It seemed fresh and that you actually cared about their response. I did. I was actually right there with them. I really enjoyed it. And for those who have not seen the interview yet, we're going to play it on the show today, so you'll be able to listen to it. For those watching live, you'll be able to see it. Josh, I think you forgot to remove your Cloak of Invisibility. That's in Thor, right?
Right, yes.
He says, but don't worry, I just added a few Joshisms myself. Most notably, fuck it, I'll watch it at the end of the interview. Joshables represent.
Yeah.
Is there anything the film actuallyers can do to get the two of you more press interviews? Keep on doing what you're doing, Mike from Canada. There's not a lot you guys can do except drop us lots of ratings.
Yep.
Make sure all your friends download the episodes.
Yeah, and just occasionally re-Facebook or retweet stuff that we put up on the site. That
absolutely
always helps.
Yep. The more we are in people's faces, the more they know we're there. Yep. That's the biggest. Support is the biggest thing you guys can do. Mm. P.S. He knows the Cloak of Invisibility is not from Thor. I was just seeing if I could get Josh to say something funny.
I'll save it for later in the show, dude. Not yet.
Thank you very much, Mike. It is always a pleasure getting emails from you. Mm. And Josh wasn't wearing any Cloak of Invisibility. Unfortunately, they only allowed one of us into the room. Josh was
the
there.
I spent the whole time in the background chatting to everyone that was our new friends at every single online site in Australia.
We had fun. We were in that waiting room for about 4 hours.
Yep.
And we had such a good time with all the other bloggers.
Absolutely. These guys were hilarious fun. And considering we all considered ourselves being in the B room, it was really good fun.
I'll explain it. They explained that the A room right next door to us had Kenneth Branagh and Chris Hemsworth.
Exactly.
And we didn't get that room. We got the B room. But the B room, I think, was more fun, quite frankly.
Oh, absolutely. And the A room interviewers still got chucked in there, which was good fun because we were mocking them as well.
Callison wants to know, did we ask if he liked DC Comics? No.
Not a good question to ask.
No, not right at that moment. Yeah. Mike also says, hey, one more thing. In the second email. He says, I was watching Sharkman with a buddy. I don't know Sharkman. Do you know Sharkman?
No.
He says, I was watching Sharkman with a buddy. The show is about men fighting for fishing for sharks and then tagging them. It had Paul Walker as a deckhand. The whole show, my buddy and I were trying to think of movie plots and lines that he could say when he makes a Sharkman movie. It sounds lame, but was quite hilarious. I have never heard of this show. I'm going to look for this show. All right, Corin. Now, if you remember, Corin wrote to us a while ago. It was the one about we make fun of geeks too much and so forth, but they do like the show. Mm-hmm. And look, they're still listening, so you know we've done something right. Corin writes and says, hi, David. Great show as always. I think you mean hi, David and Josh. Hi, David. Great shows as always.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys. There you go.
Nobody's saying hi to David because you're always there.
I guess so. Great shows as always. Sadly, right now, I am 3 episodes behind due to the high workload, but we'll try and catch up soon. We're always there. You can always catch us later. I just want to send you a link to a freaky trailer I came across last week. After watching, I thought this was something you both would like. Some pretty funny splatter trash. I hope it's new for you. The film is called Rubber. It's actually not new.
Fuck fucking so excited about that film, dude. A good choice because it looks bizarre. And
do
if
we
there's
have
one
the
thing,
no, we don't have the trailer. The only reason we haven't played the trailer up until now is because there's very little spoken in it, and so because it's just a tire rolling around. Basically, it's about a tire that becomes sentient and then goes around. Rolling
killing.
Around, killing people.
Yes, I have heard of.
And it looks bizarre, and I do want to see it.
In the best kind of ways. It looked bizarre in the brilliant
and
kind
it was
of
incredibly
ways.
Popular in the film festival circuits. So we are desperately wanting to see Rubber. So when it shows up, we will watch it. The trailer, I will tell you what I'll do. I will find the trailer and embed it on Geek Actually so you guys can watch it there. Okay? Yeah. Now, the last one we have here is from our friend Geek Betty. Geek Betty has written and said that this is, she doesn't know if we've been following this or not, but this is hilarious. And I agree. And we will just spend just 2 seconds on this. Apparently, Australian critic Jim Shembri recently wrote a review and then gave away for a review for Scream 4, gave away who the killer was at the beginning of his review. And then mysteriously turned around and said, no, I never did that. And when you go back and follow his tweets, he's deleted all those tweets and replaced them with new ones. And everybody is basically jumping up and down saying, this guy is an asshole. Why did he do this? And they've actually recorded or captured his old tweets. So the record is there. And it should be a lesson for Jim Shembri that you cannot just time machine backwards and say it didn't happen, because this stuff is always around.
Like an embargo on that or something?
No, it's just that you don't give away.
You don't do that kind of stuff.
You don't give away the ending of a mystery in a review. That's just not, especially something like Scream, where we know it's all about who is the killer.
Exactly.
And it's been the same on all of the Scream films. Jim Shembri is not one of my favorite reviewers, and I think he's actually a bit of a twit, quite frankly.
Most comedians are.
Not comedian, critic.
Critic. Most critics are.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And I actually don't like his reviews very much. And I think that if this actually really slaps him in the face, I say good.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
Some people
because
sometimes just need a wake-up call.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this guy is like he's made of Teflon. Nothing ever sticks to him. So we take this opportunity in the show at this point to talk about what we have been watching this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, quite frankly, Thor has been high on the list. We've seen it twice now, if that's an indication for our review. But what else have you been doing this week?
Oh, we sat down and watched all three Grudge films back-to-back, the Western ones. And look, I got to say to anyone out there that says they're not good, you're idiots, okay? It's actually got... No, because to be fair to it, you may not have liked it or you may feel that it does a lot of things that have been done in other movies. Yeah, okay, fine, whatever. Reality is, shot for shot, there are some great horror moments in that. And some really good use of suspension horror without the violence that we just don't see anymore. And they are a lot better than any sort of one that we had in the original films. It's like I went back and like I've seen the original Grudge film, just the first one, and I've seen the two little side ones that they made, The White Ghost and Black Ghost. We've started to watch those, and they're bad.
Like I'm talking shoestring budget, Z grade bad.
Yeah. And for everyone that doesn't know, there was a third Grudge film. Don't watch that. That's a mess.
James from Melbourne would like to point out that we've just got another Joshism. You're idiots.
I haven't actually seen The Eye, which somebody's mentioning in the chat room. I should probably check out. Look,
there's also the Japanese original version of Dark Water.
There's a bunch of things we're trying to fill in the gaps with at the moment when it comes to horrors like that. I would like to say that, Grudge 1 and 2. Grudge 2 is probably not the better of the films. It ties up nicely and wraps into the first one and brings everything round correctly. The middle lags quite a bit, but the intro, like, first 10 minutes are solid, solid horror stuff. Like, they are terrifying. And done in the best way. These films play on those bits of us that just feel unsettled in a house or that don't like being shut in a cupboard, or the way that you can feel if something's happened in a house, and it's a great feeling. And I think the original, I'm not sure how well people rate the original to the sequels, but I thought Sam Raimi's produced original director's versions of The Grudge, 1 and 2 are actually good films.
I'd have to say I did prefer 1 to 2.
Absolutely.
But again, they're surprisingly not bad.
Which I'm ashamed to admit it, but I've actually never seen the remakes of The Grudge because, like a lot of people, I was told they were crap.
Yeah.
And I have avoided them, but I am actually curious to see the first one.
Yeah, look, there are better films, and it's not the world's greatest film, but as far as horrors go, some people just need to get their head out of their ass when it comes to horrors. No horror is necessarily the best thing you will ever see. There are very few horrors that you can put in top pinned category films. So when you're looking for horrors, 7.5 on IMDb usually means it was a freaking good horror.
And also, you're talking, these ratings are coming from people who like horror films. They're coming from fans.
Exactly.
So, I think this is actually kind of a motive for this entire podcast originally when we started doing Geek Actually way back 3 years ago, and when this spun off into its own show, was we were really kind of, excuse the pun, but we had a grudge against critics.
Yeah.
We were at a point where we were kind of like, they're just so out of touch with what people actually want to watch. And so when we started doing this show, we were kind of like, one of the reasons why we don't do ratings. It's because I think ratings are pointless. Ratings are an arbitrary number. This is why we like to talk a film out and say.
Yeah.
And bottom line is, did you enjoy watching the film and would you recommend it to a friend? That really is what it comes down to. It really comes down to, it doesn't matter if it's War and Peace or whether it's The Grudge, did you enjoy it?
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly.
And if you enjoyed it,
it's
fantastic.
Also, it's also so true what you say, Dave, as well, that did a film succeed in what it set out to do? So you can't sit down and watch a child's film and say, oh, the plot was really childish, I didn't like it, but the effects were good. It's like, no, it's a children's film, therefore it's set out to be a children's film.
Absolutely.
Or if it's a horror, therefore it's set out to scare you. It's not set out to have brilliant plot development or brilliant character development. Whereas if it's a drama, then you can say the characters are great.
Yeah, and look, in every genre, there are going to be examples of films which excel the genre and basically cross the barriers and basically become masterpieces of cinema.
Yeah.
But that is actually much rarer than people think.
Exactly. And the whole thing is, you have to take each film on whether or not you can enjoy it. And it's the kind of thing that, if you sit down and watch these Grudge films, yeah, look, they're not without problems. And I mean, if you actually sat down with the intention, like any horror movie, with the intention of not going along with what's on screen and pointing out what's wrong with it, the people that are afraid of horrors, the people that don't deal with these sort of things well, or people that are just douchebags, then reality is, you're going to notice that, yes, the girl that comes down is probably a little silly looking, and she's probably not as terrifying as people think.
Sorry, reverse soundtrack in our chat room is basically said, and just a reminder, we go out live and we have a chat room, that's who we talk to. But reverse soundtrack in our chat room is basically said, horrors are set out to scare people? I thought they were for humor value.
And some of them are. But like, that's what I'm saying. When you come to a situation like The Grudge, you have to accept that there will be certain aspects that supposed to be staring at the environment, the way that the person would be feeling and stuff like that. These are what horrors set out to do. Mm. They set out to attack and play with those strings in all of us that don't like walking down a dark alley.
The Grudge was one of my scariest films of all time for quite a while before I saw The Descent.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, and this is the whole thing. It plays well on that
Descent's
idea.
Descent's a great film.
Exactly.
No, yeah, The Descent is a fantastic horror movie. And if you're into horror, I would really recommend it, because even before the shit hits the fan, it's claustrophobic, it's atmospheric, and it's just really an uncomfortable film to watch even before the bad shit starts to happen. So
The Descent to The Grudge makes me really want to see The Grudge.
Yeah,
because it's great stuff. We're still getting that hum from that laptop. It's driving me crazy. Ah, there it is. What have you watched this other than you? Actually, you guys are kind of in cahoots, aren't you? I'm outnumbered here. All right. I got to say, this week I rewatched The King's Speech. God, that still holds up.
Funnily enough, so did we.
Amazing.
Well, we didn't rewatch it all the way through, but our flatmate was watching it. So
amazing stuff.
We sort of watched a bit of it. It was very...
Here is the power of that film. My 11-year-old sat down and stayed for the entire film and was glued to it as much as we were. And you sit there and go, that is really something special. You know, that is something special if it can grab an 11-year-old with it as well. I also rewatched Flash Gordon this week on Blu-ray, and I got to say...
We tried.
We couldn't. I think our attention span was in the wrong place.
And then we were like, let's watch Family Guy.
You got to be in the right headspace to watch Flash Gordon. The campiest, loudest, most impressive example of 80s extremity ever put on film.
Yep.
Gaudy, loud, but God, it's funny.
And then there's this weird incestual relationship between Ming the Merciless and his daughter, and she's all like up on him and stuff. It's really wrong. Yes, it's hilarious.
There's lots of her rubbing her body against him.
Yeah, in that lycra suit she's in.
Yeah.
And let's not forget great roles from people like our favorite Bond person.
Oh, Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton.
Basically is Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And let's not forget the leader of the Hawkmen with, "Bring me the remote!" it is a joy to watch that film. It is so bad. Do not go into this film thinking you're going to get a good film. Nope. That is first and foremost.
Yeah.
If you know that it's camp crap, you're going to have a lot of fun with it. And boy, is it bright. It is so bright. And as I say, we've also been very busy because we've seen Thor twice.
Yeah.
So that's also been a big thing this week as well. Just for all those geeks out there, just a reminder that Tron Legacy and Harry Potter have now come out on Blu-ray. So go out and grab those. I know my son is just hammering me. When are we getting them? When are we getting them? When are we getting them? So we're going to get those as well at some point. All right. I think we should move on to a feature film review, don't you?
Oh, yes.
I think we should. And this week, of course, we are doing Thor. Now, this is a bit of an awkward one because for the US listeners, you don't get it till May. I think it's 5th is the date. We got it on Thursday the 21st or Thursday the 21st.
Hey, you cracking out the dad jokes.
You saw what I did there. for those who are in the know, Thursday is actually named after Thor. So I think it was very appropriate that we opened it on a Thor's Day.
Yeah.
All right, directed by Kenneth Branagh. Now, not a director who you would normally associate with this kind of film. He's a classical director, has done lots of Shakespeare, and was actually a big concern if you go back over the forums, people saying, really, Branagh directing this? And I will say that he did very well. I think he actually, and when you watch the interview coming up, you'll see one of the things that Tom Hiddleston actually talks about is the fact that it is right up his wheelhouse. Big themes, royal courts, and so forth. Written by Zach Stentz, Ashley Miller, Don Payne, based on the Marvel comic book created by Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Larry Lieber. The film stars Chris Hemsworth, our boy, Australian.
Yeah, I'm willing to say did a good job.
He did a good job.
I'm willing to stand behind him as an Australian actor, and that doesn't happen very often.
And I got to say, I was really worried because the best stuff he does is not in the trailer. And when you watch a trailer, I actually went, oh, dear. Yep. This isn't going
to
work.
If you can shake the accent, I'm willing to ride along just to see what you can actually handle.
Sorry?
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. As in, like, he shaked the Australian accent.
Yeah. He actually did quite a good job. Natalie Portman, a personal favorite here, Anthony Hopkins, Tom Hiddleston, Stellan Skarsgård, Kat Dennings, Jamie Alexander, Idris Elba, Ray Stevenson, Clark Gregg reprising Agent Coulson, who is just wonderful. And I put Ray Stevenson twice. There you go. He was so good, he gets listened twice.
Ray Stevenson again.
He was so
because
good.
Because there's a huge man underneath that suit.
The actor is so good, he gets listed twice. Yeah. All right. So now this synopsis we have here is kind of a hybrid from a little bit of what Paramount has to say, a little bit what IMDb has to say, a little bit of me. But basically we say the mighty Thor, powerful but arrogant warrior, whose reckless actions reignite an ancient war. For his actions, Thor is cast down to Earth by his father Odin and is forced to live among humans. A beautiful young scientist, Jane Foster, has a profound effect on Thor as she ultimately becomes his first love. It's while on Earth that Thor learns what it takes to be the heir to the throne of Asgard and a true hero. With the help of his warriors three and the warrior maiden Sif, Thor must stop his treacherous brother Loki from destroying his kingdom. Ha! There you go. There's a mouthful for you. And to get us into the mood for this review, I have the trailer. So let's have a quick look at, I would say, the Thor trailer, if I had the Thor trailer. Where is the Thor trailer? Talk amongst yourselves for a minute. I will find the Thor trailer while we're actually... I had the Thor trailer all lined up. I don't know what happened to it. Let's just dig up that Thor trailer here.
Wow, man. We are so on
today. I had that Thor trailer. I must have deleted it at the last minute without even thinking about it. Here's the Thor trailer.
Sir, we found it.
Government agencies have now cordoned off the area and are
investigating. Jane, I think you want to see this. You all right?
threaten me, Thor, with so puny a weapon?
What? He was freaking me out!
Where did he come from?
Name?
He said it was Thor?
You know, for a crazy homeless person, he's pretty cut.
How'd you get inside that cloud?
Also, how could you eat an entire box of Pop-Tarts and still be this hungry?
This drink, I like it. Another!
This is going on Facebook. Smile.
Your ancestors called it magic, and you call it science. Well, I come from a place where they're one and the same.
But who are you, really?
You'll see soon enough.
God, I hope you're not crazy.
Do you swear to guard the lives of the innocent and preserve the peace?
I swear. I will destroy their kind.
You can't kill an entire race.
Then die with them.
These people are innocent. I have no plans to die today.
Okay, so we approached this film, I think Josh and I approached this film with a little bit of hesitation. We were
hesitation more than sort of like any sort of disrespect towards it. Like I wasn't worried about what they were bringing to the table in the fact that I was like, oh God, this is going to be crap. It was just more of a, to me, it's a really heavy subject because to me, I'm not worried about it because I'm worried about the film and I think things are going to go terribly. I'm worried because it's kind of the linchpin. This is the first time we've stepped outside the realm of the people we've already seen setting these films up. You know, we've got these two films that have sort of slowly and gradually increased the power of the coming Avengers film. Because everyone that comes out solidly is one more step in the direction of what we want to happen.
Yeah.
And Thor was this wild card. Because it's like, we're kind of a bit more trusting of Joe Johnson's like thing now that we've seen, you know, the trailer. But for Thor, the trailer was kind of like, I was like, I'm interested, but I'm not excited.
Yeah, I wasn't either.
Average
kinda,
trailer.
Yeah, the trailer was kind of like, just move your mic a little bit closer, Selena. The trailer was kind of like, I looked at it going, it doesn't quite hit the mark, you know? And I wanted it to. I wanted it to be much more than it was, and it wasn't quite there. So, that being said, we finally saw the film, obviously, and I was really surprised. I was really pleasantly surprised. I thought Kenneth Branagh did a great job. I thought he really pulled this together. He managed to meld this fantastical world of Asgard, which shouldn't fit into this whole Marvel world that they're creating on cinema, into reality and bring it into... And the fact that they actually shy away from the idea of actually calling them gods as such and play with concepts like when Kat Dennings says to a primitive race they would be perceived as gods. And so it grounds it in a sense of reality, which I like. I really think that's...
Well, that's... We've learned that from sort of the start of these kind of films that have slowly been coming out is the fact that what you have to do to sell it to a regular audience, sell it to everyone, make it just a great film, as opposed to a great comic book film, is to ground everything.
Yeah.
You have to make people want to believe, and more than want to believe, you don't just sort of make people expect to know certain things or sort of...
Yeah, or don't assume that people know. Give enough information so that people can enjoy that whether they know the comics or not.
Absolutely. And they don't stray so far away from the comics that comic book fans go, oh, that's not right. There are enough hints, winks, and nods to camera all the way through it that those who know the comic books go, I know that, I know that, I know that, you know? Yeah. We'll come to some of our little niggly things about the comic book adaptation in a spoiler section at the end of this, and they're not consequential to the liking of this film at all. They're things I raised in my review as well, where I say, they're only geek elements, and that's the thing. I really enjoyed this film. So much so I've seen it twice in a week. I really enjoyed this film. I really enjoyed the cast. I really enjoyed the structure of the film. I thought that the human characters were solid enough to ground it, because you've got this fantastical world. Bless you, by the way. You need those human characters to ground it on Earth. Mm. And to make
You need them to ask the questions that the people in the audience do. Mm. You need them to be kind of like the resounding idea of, why are these people here? What are they doing?
Yeah.
And look, I mean, they did a great job at that, except for the young girl who I hated.
See, I quite enjoyed Kat Dennings, but that's a personal thing. There's been, if you go to the forums, there's to and fro's on that. There's some people who really like her, some people who don't. I thought she offered a really nice comic foil to what the events that were transpiring, and I thought she was quite funny.
I think her lines would have been better in someone else's mouth. I thought she just didn't sell at all.
I think she was trying to just kind of grab the MTV market.
Yeah, I could feel that. Yeah, like every line that came out was kind of like it almost
popular culture.
Yeah, exactly. It was like Facebook, iPad, you know, iPod. It's like her lines were to throw out to a generation that might not be paying attention.
Fair enough. No, that is understandable. I can see that. Yeah. I actually have a clip from Thor, if you want to have a look at it. It's a clip that is actually in the trailer, but this is the full clip. So have a look at this.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's awesome. It's a costume. Brilliant.
Oh, man, this is gold. Where did you find this?
The acting is just incredible.
And it's so drawn out.
You're a century's version of hell, eh, Blake? Is this a hallucination?
Okay, as you would have guessed,
don't say it again.
As you may have guessed, that is entirely the wrong clip.
Wow,
that was a clip from the Incredible Hulk Returns, the television series. They made two TV movies in a row, basically, where they introduced other Marvel characters because they were trying to spin them off into new series. This one, of course, guest starred Thor, and the second one was called The Trial of the Incredible Hulk, which guest starred Daredevil.
Wow,
and they were both awful.
Yes.
But I do. But I really do have. I really do have that clip. So let's have a look at this. This is from the new Thor.
Name?
He said it was Thor.
T H O.
I love the way she just doesn't even care. She's like, yeah.
I've never met him before.
Until she hit him with a car.
I grazed him, but she tasered him.
Yes, I did.
Hi.
I fucking.
Just taking a little blood.
How dare you attack the son of Odin!
I need some help! I need help.
You're no match for the mighty!
I love how beaten up he is for his first couple of days on Earth. He's hit by a car twice. He's tasered.
But it's part of that wonderful journey that he takes, where it's kind of like it is kind of bringing him down to Earth. And I mean, like, it is a journey that you can kind of really get on with. You said it best when you were saying that you're kind of, he's the perfect person for the role because he is an arrogant prick for the first half of the film, but that's what you're trying to sell.
Yeah,
you're trying to sell him as the guy that's kind of like, you know, I'm better than everyone, and then sort of like grounding him and throwing him into the situation is where we get as an audience to start to kind of rise with his journey.
Yeah,
and we get to love him, and that worked really well. And I thought the
journey of Thor, the journey of the character of Thor, is actually surprisingly well rounded.
Yeah.
I mean, he starts with that arrogant swagger. There's that opening scene where he's walking through the ceremony, and he actually winks to his mother at one point.
Yeah.
And he's tossing his hammer in the air. And it's like, look at me, I'm so good.
Yeah.
And it's that humbling experience of being put on Earth,
yep,
discovering Jane Foster. And even though we only have 2 hours to do it, they actually managed to pull it off. And you feel like you've actually gone on his journey. He discovers empathy and humanity, you know, which is why he is there in the first place. And I think that works very, very well.
Yeah, and it's funny because these things aren't it's not like they're not in him. It's just that it's kind of a dormant part of him. Like when he actually, you see, he has this side of him that is incredibly sort of almost a little too kind of like...
Well, he's essentially the son of God. Mm. Yeah. He's been given the most powerful weapon in existence, and there's nothing he can't do. Mm. He's never learnt to be humble.
But he was always an arrogant character, even in the comic books.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. Because, as I say, he's the son of God, basically. Exactly. Or a god. I mean, we're talking about the Norse gods here, but, I mean, you know, he is literally virtually invulnerable. He's immortal. He, you know, has... Mjolnir, the most powerful weapon in existence, you know, and it's like, why wouldn't he be cocksure of himself? But that's his downfall. Mm. And the one thing he never learned to do, which is what Odin wanted, was he never learned to think.
Yeah, exactly.
To be empathic to other people's needs and what is best.
His father had always filled that role for him.
That's right. Exactly. Absolutely.
And, like, it was his learning path that he needed to do. And this is the great thing about it. It's a story, and a lot of comic books are. It's one of those stories that kind of is a life lesson and a journey for everyone.
Now, like, we've had a comment in the chat room from James from Melbourne who basically said, it's a romance. Shit, I don't want that. I want... No, the romance is... secondary.
They're terrible, but you don't really, it doesn't bother you.
No,
but
and
it's not a major, yeah.
And it's not actually not a major plot point. It's very subtle happening in the background. It's, they never actually have this moment like, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. Mm. So we're not talking about Superman Returns here. It is, there's a connection between these two people. And,
exactly.
And that's where it goes to. I think we're headed for the romance and probably even a romantic triangle in a sequel.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a whole different issue because, as you'll see from the interview, that's one of the questions I asked. Because in the comic book, the character of Sif has a romantic relationship with Thor, and how would that play out with Jane Foster and everything else going on? So they didn't have time in this film to cover that much information, but I'm sure we will see more of that as it goes on.
Yeah.
Celine, you haven't said much. What were your thoughts on the movie?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I went in with kind of average expectations because I didn't enjoy the trailer, and the post-production footage that we saw where the costumes were kind of plastic was really tacky, and I've only really ever liked one Thor version, like comic version, which is the one we talked about a while ago with the dude with the long name. Where
J. Michael Straczynski?
Straczynski. Yeah. His comic version is absolutely fantastic, and I've just never been a massive Thor fan, and I absolutely loved it. I think it had the right balance of humor and serious plot developments and character developments to really enjoy it.
And what's interesting about this film as well is if you look at the credits, it actually says based on, the story is actually based on two people. One of them is J. Michael Straczynski.
Ah.
So they've actually,
but you can tell that
they've dug into his story.
Yeah, a lot of the elements from that comic book, which I think is just called Thor, were in the film. And I think, you know, and their casting was absolutely fucking brilliant. And I'm in love with Ray Stevenson. And even the dude who played Loki was amazing as
Absolutely. Hiddleston was the best part
of
this film.
They edited in the Asgard stuff with the Earth stuff really, really well, because there's actually a lot of the storyline takes place in Asgard. And it's not like that's the problem I have with the trailer, is I kind of present the stuff that happens as Earth is the key part of the film. Yeah. It's actually not. A lot of the film does take part in Asgard. It's about 50-50. And they tie it in absolutely beautifully.
It's something I raised in the review, which is that, I mean, essentially you've got a film that takes place across two dimensions.
Yeah.
And you never get lost. Yeah. You never feel like, where the hell am I now? What the hell timeline? Yeah. We feel like we're going along with the story.
Absolutely. And it's just, I think it's an example of fantastic directing and even fantastic editing.
Mm. Yeah.
Josh?
I think Celine actually said it the best before the film came out, where it was the kind of film that if it took itself too seriously, it was going to be its biggest downfall.
Yeah.
It's like you have to be able to realize that we would perceive this stuff as silly.
Yeah.
And that's why it really works. It's like you're absolutely right. The humor line between humor and seriousness is just a perfect balance. And it's the kind of thing that just one way or the other would have destroyed the whole film because you really needed to ground it like that. And that's that was a really good point. I agree with that.
The film has actually made me very, very excited for Captain America. I must say that.
And all the little cameos like Hawkeye. And,
There's somebody...
Marvel's in strong form.
Yeah.
They're in strong form. And I will say, we're not going to say anything about it, but we will say just stay to the end of the credits. By now you should know Mark Marvel comics always have something in the sting in the tail.
Still walking out. Why?
Both screenings, and we actually went to a media screening, a top secret embargoed media screening with hardened people, and we were the only ones left.
Mm.
At, by the time the credit, you go, you guys don't know. You know, it's like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know.
God, no, I lost it.
I was about to say, the Hawkeye thing is actually very interesting because a lot of people said, oh, you spoiled it. Well, no, it's actually a clip has been made available online for a while that actually kind of hinted at
that
it.
Doesn't really spoil
and it's not
anything.
Actually, it's not, I'll give you one hint right now, it is not the end credit scene.
No.
So a lot of people
no,
saying,
no,
oh,
it's like in the beginning of the film.
It's right in the middle of the film and yeah. he is just working for S.H.I.E.L.D. And they don't even mention him by name.
No.
But it is Jeremy Renner.
And you know it's him because he has a bow and arrow. Obviously.
And he's got his bow and arrow and he's great.
Yeah,
he's got like three or four lines, and they're gold. He's terrific in it. So yeah, keep your eyes open for that. There's also another character that has been in hot debate at the moment amongst the geeks, which is in that once again the same clip that you see Hawkeye in that is available online. I think we've actually got it embedded at Geek actually, where this huge black guy knocks him down, and Thor has the line where he goes, "You're big. Thor's bigger," you know.
Yeah.
And he has a huge fight with him. And there's a lot of speculation at the moment: is that Luke Cage?
Yeah.
And are we setting up something else at this point, or is he just a large S.H.I.E.L.D. person? I love how geeks immediately latch onto stuff.
Yeah.
There. It's like, you know. So we don't know.
Hey, you give him an inch, man, they'll take a mile. That's what comic book people do.
So look, overall, I'm going to recommend this to everybody. I think if you are a comic geek, you're going to get a lot out of it. If you're not a comic geek, you're going to get a lot out of it. If you are a fan of, if you are wanting to gear up for the Avengers movie next year, you're going to get a lot out of this. This is setting a lot up. So,
well, yeah, this film did three things for me. Number one, it was just a great film, and I very much enjoyed it as that. Number two, it sort of alleviated some of the fears I have for the coming movie because we have so much set up we have to get right before the Avengers will work. Any of these films that fail can destroy the end product.
Mm.
And so far, I'm very happy about that. And also, it put Tom Hiddleston on my must-watch actors.
Absolutely.
Tom
Hiddleston's fantastic.
This man made the film for me, and on top of that, I just can't wait to see him do anything else.
We're going to play that interview in just a second here. Let's round this up, though, and basically say, would you recommend it to people?
I definitely would, and it's hard to kind of look at films like this and not recommend it as an un-geek, because as a geek I'm more like, oh my god, Thor. But it's sort of like, even if you didn't know anything about the storyline but you just wanted a fun supernatural / action thriller drama, I definitely recommend it.
With a lot of heart.
With a lot of heart. And it's got some fucking hilarious moments and also some really brilliant moments. And I mean, the only actor who pisses me off is the fucking MTV chick. But she's totally dealable.
And she is there for a purpose. She is there for comic relief.
Yeah, and to be fair to her, she's basically, the only reason she annoys us is because if we met her in real life, she'd probably annoy us as well. So, like, we can't hate her for that. She did her role as what she was supposed to be doing. You know.
Yeah. No, there was no actor in that film that I felt really let down by.
No. Yeah. I have to say, I am really, really enjoying Natalie Portman's career at the moment.
Mm.
I'm really enjoying what she's doing with her career. I'm really, post-Star Wars, I'm really enjoying what she's doing.
There are a couple of lines where she sounds a bit ditzy. There's a bit where she goes, oh my god! And you're just kind of like, what? And yeah, so that kind of got to me a bit, but it was really,
funnily enough,
you could totally overlook that.
I've also got, I can also report on this film from the non-geek point of view because my lovely wife Katie came with us as well. She loved the film. She thought it was really good. And lines like that, she gets a chuckle out of.
Yeah.
And
I laughed.
You know, and it's like her delivery of that. It's almost a little bit reminiscent of Indiana Jones with the whole, with Kate Capshaw's character going, oh my God, on the bridge.
Like,
remember?
All the time. Yeah. Every second line, Indy!
Specifically though, when they're on the rope bridge and he tells Short Round in Chinese to hold on and he goes, hang on lady, we're going for a ride.
He's talking about lady only in film because she's lit with director.
Yeah, absolutely. that line kind of has reminiscent of that kind of delivery of that moment. But I'm really enjoying what she's doing, and I love the fact that she will go do something like Black Swan, which is so serious, and she wins her Oscar, and you sit there and go, that's fantastically deep. And then she still wants to go off and do stuff like this.
But she still plays believable characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the whole thing about her is that it becomes a bit of a curse in Oscar, because if you're not willing to just round yourself out and you try to aim for those roles constantly, you're not going to keep winning Oscars.
No.
Very few people keep winning Oscars. just act. And that means in every aspect.
And have fun with it. I mean, and that's the trick.
If your life is that serious, you're going to end up like Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can tell that she really enjoys acting. And I think that's important for an actor, because the actors that do take themselves too seriously, and you watch interviews with them and they're snobs or assholes and kind of their head stuck up their ass. You watch them in the films and you can't enjoy them because they just take it too seriously.
Yep. So the question is, do you want to do a 5-minute spoiler zone or watch an interview?
Watch an interview.
Let's watch an interview. All right.
We all recommend it. We all loved it.
Go see it. Oh, one last note on this film. The 3D is a post-convert 3D.
And this was great.
And this was a big concern of ours. This is the best post-convert 3D
you will ever see.
It's not amazing, but it's good. Like, after seeing it for a second time, because the first time you're watching a lot of the stuff, you can actually noticeably see it's a post-convert. But out of post-converts, it's the best we've seen.
Yeah, it's the best we've seen so far, and it gives me hope the post-convert can work. Mm. Yeah. If you plan for it and give yourself enough time, unlike Clash of the Titans and their 6-month post-convert job that they did.
Yeah, but that had a lot more problems than just 3D.
Yeah, well, that's true. This shows you that post-converting can work. It's still not as good as shooting it natively 3D, but it is a damn good 3D and worth the 3D money. All right, so without further ado, we were invited to the junket for Thor here in Australia, and I interviewed, Josh helped me set the questions up, and we were there together. It's just they only let one of us in the room. Jamie Alexander, who plays Sif in the film, and Tom Hiddleston, who played Loki, and they were a joy. So sit back and have a watch this. I love these two people. I'm huge fans. Here they are.
First of all, let me just say I saw the film, loved it. I actually had a blast. I think it's a great start to the superhero season, so to speak. Just curious, so Kenneth Branagh was a very interesting choice for this film, and I was just wondering if that had an influence on you choosing the role, with having somebody of that caliber taking on the role.
It's very much icing on the cake, I think. You know, the script was so good, and the characters are so well-rounded, and then to have him directing, and then, you know, Anthony Hopkins, Natalie Portman, this guy, you know, Chris. I mean, it was just... it was definitely the completion of the puzzle.
I mean, when I first saw the film, my immediate thought was, it's got those grand scale events that Branagh is famous for, with the whole betrayal and the royal courts and everything.
Absolutely.
Else.
Mm. I think he would say he's somebody who's always been interested in power, or in what happens behind the closed doors in the households of people who run things.
Yep.
You know, Hamlet is a play about the palace of Denmark and the royal family shattering in pain, and this is really about the royal family in Asgard shattering in pain.
Mm.
So there's something he's definitely interested in about this kind of dynastic drama, which is very, very pure storytelling, I think. So,
He's a great choice for it. Were either of you fans of the comic or comics in general before doing this?
Thank you. I was. Yeah, I grew up on comic books, mainly X-Men and Spider-Man.
Me too.
I know. Yeah. Then you know. Actually, one of my favorite characters was Jubilee.
Oh, yes.
I didn't see her in the films. I was like, dang. But, I had read Thor, but I hadn't read as many, you know, Thor comics as I had, you know, X-Men and that sort of thing. But I have four brothers, so that's where that came from. But when I heard about this movie being made, I thought, oh, they're finally going to make it. Because, I always thought, I was like, there's so much material out there comic book-wise. There's so many opportunities. And it was just really, really awesome that they were going to do this. And then I was like, I wonder if I could be in it somehow. And then I was. So it was kind of awesome. I think I kind of willed that my entire childhood up until now.
So you were not into comics as a child?
I was actually, but I had this deck of I had a deck of what's called, I don't know if you had top trumps.
Oh yes.
Like, you can have them for racing cars and fighter planes and stuff. And I had Marvel superheroes, so I had this deck of all of the characters, superheroes and supervillains, and they were all listed according to their height and weight and agility and intelligence and superpowers. So that was my way in, really, to Thor and Loki.
Fantastic. And so, when you researched for the roles, did you actually go back to the comics, or were you reliant on the script and Kenneth Branagh to get you through?
Well, I read the script and I said, okay, I know with my previous knowledge that this is a little bit different, but the movie definitely pays tribute to the different storylines that happen in the comic book. Mm. So the movie has its own identity. So what we were careful about was not just basing our performances or our take on our characters just with the comic books only. It was important for us to bring ourselves to the character and have our own identity. So I did. I reread a lot of comic books, and then just sort of had a nerd fest with Kevin Feige and Craig Kyle about, you know, who is this woman and what are her capabilities and what would you like to see, and we geeked out for about 2 hours, and then after that I was like, all right, I'm ready, let's go.
and for you?
Oh, I just thought I had to sort of pay due deference to the 40 years worth of history, and I was lucky enough that Ken Branagh invited me to sort of come to the table at that very early stage with the script, and he said, you know, have a look at the comics and tell me and tell the writer, Don Payne, a brilliant writer, mm-hmm. What do you think he was asking me, what do you think is interesting about Loki? What are his most dramatic aspects and characteristics? What do you want to pull out of the comics? What can we find in there that's good for a 2-hour film?
Right.
So I went back to Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, and then all the way through to J. Michael Straczynski and Robert Rohde and stuff. A terrific Loki comic on its own, which is amazing in its extension of compassion towards Loki's predicament.
But Loki's such an interesting and detailed character.
Oh, he's a great character. I know, I was so jealous. I was like, dang, you got a lot of meat in this. It's so good.
Well,
you do it so well, though. That's the thing.
Time will come when Loki comes back.
Takes over Sif's body.
In the body of Sif. And so it'll be up to you. And maybe.
Well, that actually brings up another question. In the comic books, Sif actually has a romantic relationship with Thor.
Right.
Was that ever explored in the early days of setting up this film or for the future?
You know, we like I said, we pay tribute to that in the film very subtly, but it's not, it's definitely not the focal point.
There was a look and a glance here and there.
Yes, yeah. Yes, thank you, simply put. But I think I was reading some of the comic books, and I forgot that Loki takes over Sif's body, and it was really awkward because I was like, Tom, read this. but that's one way you could go, I guess.
Let's go there.
It should be fun.
Yeah.
There's so many different
Different variations and ways and things. Yeah. But I suppose, like, and also with respect, I suppose the the first romantic attachment that you see in the comics is with Jane Foster. Mm-hmm. You know, when we discover Thor at the very beginning of his incarnation as a superhero, he's with her. So that in a way, I think Ken, even though he knew about the Thor-Sif relationship, he thought he had to pay respect to that aspect of it.
And it modernizes it as well, which is important.
But it fits very much within J. Michael Straczynski's world.
Right,
well.
Yes, right. It does.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting as well. Mm-hmm. I was looking through your histories and your filmographies and noticing that you have very extensive careers in theater and television and so forth. What was it like moving into something this big?
Oh,
this is a giant film.
I hadn't done anything of this caliber before. Physically, I have. I've had a lot of. For some reason, I seem to get roles that are quite physical. I don't know. I must walk around with like an invisible cape. Yeah, I know. Right. But as for the theater background, I don't know. You should take that one. I mean, this guy is incredible.
I don't know about that.
He's pretty incredible. I watched The Gathering Storm last night. Wonderful performance, man.
Very
wonderful performance.
Thank you very much. That's really kind. I guess in many ways I was given the job because of my theatre background. There's something so theatrical about Asgard and the story up in that shining city that kind of maybe is part of a skill set that I have. But you know, it is different. The thing about theatre is it's just a different scale. You know, you're doing it live. You're doing the whole thing every night, 8 shows a week for 3 months, and you know, maybe to 400 people or 800 people a night. And this is something you do over 6 months, and then however many millions one hopes will see the film. So there is an extra sense of scale, I guess. But acting's acting. Doesn't matter whether you're doing it on stage or on TV or on film. It's you know, what we're trying to do is be as truthful and as honest as we possibly can in terms of the playing of our characters. So it sort of doesn't matter really. It doesn't matter who how many crazy sets or frost giants you're fighting. You're trying to find the truth of the moment.
Right. Well, and in some ways, big special effects films are a little bit like theatre as well. There's a lot of space, substance, and imagination.
Yeah, you're having to fuel your imagination with more ammunition in a way, because you haven't got the external stimulus of the real thing, you know. Mm. There are no location scouts that can go and find Asgard for us. So, it's playing, really. It's like when you're a kid and you're playing in the back garden. You're imagining you're in the Wild West, and you're not, of course. You're in the back garden, but that's all we're doing. We're just messing around, playing. Big kids playing.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So, are you both signed for a sequel, we hope?
That's the
hope.
Fingers crossed.
We'd hope that people will be interested enough to see what we do a second time around and where we take it. I mean, what's so great about Thor in the stories is that the universe is so big and you could go anywhere. You know, there are so many other adventures for Thor and Sif and the Warriors 3 to go on. God knows what happens to Loki, but he's always lurking in the shadows.
He's always lurking. Yeah. Well, I, for one, will be lining up for a sequel.
Oh, that's so kind.
Jamie, Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's how it went down.
I love his accent.
Oh,
isn't
absolutely.
He lovely?
He's got that kind of like introspective kind of personality, which I love in in an actor. It's just great. It's just, he's all about theater, and I love, you brought it up, but I love the fact that he just opens up so much when you sort of start talking.
You talk about the craft, and they come out. They come out to play. It's really wonderful. I love what he had to say about that. How it's about fueling your imagination, and you just kind of go with it.
It's great as well because it's really that outside look at comic books. That in what he's saying is really in essence what we're doing with this. It's like, yes, it's you know, all that sort of, you know, sort of immature things, and you know, giant gods and robots with guns and stuff like that, but it's going back and finding that part of yourself. And that's really all geek films are. And, like, it's great to hear somebody of that caliber of acting really kind of point at it.
Go out and play.
I can get what that is. And you're just like, dude, that's awesome.
No, I think he's fantastic. I think they're both really good. They're both very gracious with their time. I had a blast doing it. Somebody's asked whether I shaved my beard off for that interview. No, I did not shave my beard off for that interview.
Well, what we're doing now is until Dave grows it back, I'm kind of filling in the gap until then, and then we'll swap back.
There's a long story behind the beard coming off. We actually came off about 5 days before that interview. I had to shave again because I didn't want to look ratty for the interview. If you look, it's already starting to grow back.
It's growing back.
But it is growing back.
Just
it'll
for a little
back,
while,
baby.
I'll
it will be
the,
back.
I'll wear the itch for a couple of days.
Yes, Delta says you're the stand-in beardy.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm standing in for beardy.
It's more of a 9 o'clock shadow than anything.
This thing? Are you kidding?
It's not a beard yet. I'm sorry. That is the weakest beard I've ever seen.
James from Melbourne says, two guys, one girl, one beard. The beard is interchangeable.
Sounds like a TV show.
It does a little bit. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that. If you want to watch that interview in high def, you can. It's embedded in Geek, actually. I don't know how many times people can watch it. I've watched it a few times. Somebody said I looked a little bit nervous, a little bit starstruck maybe, just a tiny bit.
Oh,
but, you know.
Come on, be fair. Like you wouldn't be.
Absolutely.
Okay?
There's also a factor, which was it was a very small room, and I was sitting kind of awkwardly because my first instruction by the cameraman when I sat down was, you can't do this, you can't do that, because if you notice, only one hand ever comes up, because I was actually, whenever my other hand was down, it was actually holding my other hand down, because I talk with my hands.
I hate when people do that in interviews. I've been told that so many times. They're like, don't use your hands. I'm like, man, that's how I talk.
So I had one hand coming up, but that really wasn't even supposed to be coming up either. So it was a little awkward in the seating, and I looked like a hunchback at one point, which is kind of weird. But I will, that's a whole other thing. But they were lovely. All right.
I thought the whole interview was lovely, Dave. Don't beat yourself up.
I thought it was a lovely interview, and I was very proud to find out that the publicity company that is handling it actually retweeted it out, saying that they really liked it as well. So I was very honored by that. Let's move into some entertainment news, because we're actually going a little bit long now. We were trying to keep this tight. Let's keep this tight. Very sad news this week. The whole geek world is mourning because this came out of nowhere. But Elizabeth Sladen, who plays Sarah Jane in Doctor Who and the Sarah Jane Adventures, died this week. She died of a long battle with cancer, apparently. Oh, wow. She was 63 years old. I didn't even know she was sick, quite frankly.
Damn, she looks good for 63.
She looks fantastic for 63. And I got to say that she was actually one of the main reasons I used to watch Doctor Who in the 70s when she was
Tom
Baker's
companion. She brought a life to it, even
companion.
When it was such a incredibly camp kind of a thing.
Quite frankly, she was gorgeous. I had such a crush on her as a child. I really did. So it's very sad. I'm very sad that she died. And it's so sudden. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And they say she's been battling cancer for a long time, but nobody knew. So it's just kind of crept up on everybody. But anyway, so I'm very, very sad that she's died. And I think there's geeks all around the world. And judging by the feedback that we've been getting on this, a lot of people, this kind of struck.
Well, and I think that it's not, even if you weren't so much a fan of perhaps the Chronicles, the Adventures.
Sarah Jane Adventures.
Sarah Jane Adventures themselves. It's like even her short bit in the actual series along the way when she runs into David Tennant at the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she just has those few episodes and then the final cataclysmic episode at the end of what was that entire series. Is just a great kind of tribute, and you can really sort of see the love for the series when she did come back. And it's just, it was beautiful. She had a great soul to her, and she brought a lot to the series, and it will be sad for everyone that enjoyed it. Even I was upset at that, and I've only ever seen the three episodes and a few of the side episodes, but it's just... She was part of that geek crew that
liked the Sarah Jane Adventures, and he actually came and woke me up. He said, Have you heard this?
Hmm.
He said, Sarah Jane's dead. And I went, I hadn't heard this. And so I got up and I started researching, and then I found out she had died. And it was like, wow, that's just out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah. No, she fought hard, and she fought as long as she could.
Yeah. So you will be missed. Farewell, Sarah Jane. Now, the other piece of news that I wanted to... We're going to fly through news here because we're running a little bit long and it is Eastern. You guys have got somewhere to go, so we're going to get us out of here as fast as we can. Red State. We've been covering Red State a lot. This is Kevin Smith's new thriller, which he made rockin' headlines a while ago by saying that he was going to self-distribute and he wasn't going to deal with the distribution companies and so forth. He wrote a big, long post on...
God, that's long.
It is very long, on the Red Statements. Basically coming out, though, and saying, Red State's in the black. So he's managed to basically get into profit-making on his little adventure.
Awesome.
Now, the way he's done this, apparently, is that the tour that he did made a little over $1 million. With some tax incentives, he managed to get $1 million back from government, from the state of California. Originally budgeted at $5 million, with these tax incentives down to $4 million, $1 million on the tour. He's just in the final negotiations at the moment of doing the distribution deal for all non-cinema. So all the streaming, DVD, blah, blah, blah rights. And with that amongst... something else some foreign distribution deals that have already been signed, he's now crossed over the budget mark, which means everything is now profit.
That's how it's done, motherfucker.
And he did it without spending one dime on marketing.
You know, and he stood up there against everyone that hated him, everything that roasted him, everything that said he couldn't do it, and you know what? Now, it doesn't matter what anyone says from this point on, man, because you've won.
Yeah. He also wanted to make a point that when he asked one of his audiences at one of the screenings how many people heard about the film through the Smodcast Network, it was like 90% of the audience had heard of it through his podcasting network.
Spread the word.
Which means this is good news for his live radio station, which he's about to launch called Sir, because he's got this enormous audience. Mr. Smith, if you're listening, we want you on the show.
And if you're a friend of Mr. Smith, please pass that on.
He is welcome on this show at any time. Okay, we have some good news finally. And now most of you will have forgotten all about this, but let's try and refresh your memories. About 6 months ago, we played a trailer on this show for a film called Burke and Hare, which is Simon Pegg and Andy Serkis starring as a couple of grave robbers, basically, in Victorian England, directed by John Landis. And John Landis, who I was a huge fan of in his early part of his career, this is the man who made Blues Brothers, American Werewolf in London, Trading Places, Spies Like Us. I mean, he's made a lot of films. His most recent films have been a little bit lackluster, but this film apparently is very good, and they're saying it's a real return to form for him. We finally have an Australian release date. This film came out months ago in the States.
I had forgotten about this film.
So did I, but our good friends over at Paramount sent us the new Australian trailer and the new Australian poster, which you can find at geekactually.com, and basically said it's coming out in May. So I have the trailer here. I thought we'd take a look at this and just refresh your memories, because I think this is going to be comic gold, quite frankly. So here you go. Here is the trailer for Burke and Hare.
Edinburgh, 1828. The greatest minds came from all over the world. And so did these guys.
We've got no money to speak of. No plan.
We just have to work out what the demand is for, and then supply it.
Within every Clyde, there's a silver lining.
We're flat out broke.
What about old Donald's rent money?
He's dead.
Get rid of the body before it starts to stink up the place more than you two.
We used to sell to Dr. Knox at £3 a cadaver.
£3?
And I thought life around here was supposed to be cheap.
This is wrong.
I am confident that this is the only way.
I had confidence in a fart once, and I shot him over myself.
I commend you both on account of his freshness.
I'll give you £3.
I'll pay you the same for any more you can deliver.
What do you do for a living?
In surgical supplies.
You do?
I became a dancer, and things got tough, and I branched out into physical theatre.
Yeah, like acrobatics.
Sometimes.
I need to make more money, fast.
You care about women, right? They're fine, won't cost an arm and a leg.
Have you gone mad?
No, Willie. We've gone into business.
Showtime!
Is she dead?
Yeah, she snuffed it.
I certainly hope so.
It's got everything. Sex. Murder.
Are you all right?
We're talking about the ultimate crowd pleaser.
The militia.
They're closing in.
All right, wait. Show me your wounds. I think you got a perfectly lovely arse.
Aiden, Mrs. McPhee?
Well, I'm pretty sure tonight's the night.
I know this amazing trick you can do with your top.
Thank you, William.
And this is the Edinburgh Militia.
Oh, for the love of Lord Jesus!
I beg your pardon.
Burke and Hare.
What about his posture, sir? Threaten him out.
Oh, sound effects in that last scene.
It's very similar to a film that I've actually seen half of called I Sell the Dead, like down to a lot of the plot points and how it starts out as well. So I'm confused of whether
but
or
then
not
again
a,
it may be based on the same story, which is a true story.
But well, I exactly. Sell the Dead is out in DVD stores.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I wonder whether or not whether there was some collaboration.
And it has
or
one of the dudes from Lord of the Rings in it.
And also remember that this film did come out months ago. Mm. This is not a new film. This actually came out quite some time ago, and it's just taken forever to get here.
Yeah.
Mm. So be interesting to compare the two.
Yeah, well, look, maybe we'll do that when it comes
I think
comes
maybe
out.
We might. We might do that. Okay, what would you do if I told you that I'm going to play this in the background very quietly. We don't need to actually hear it because it's all in Chinese anyway. But what would you say if I told you that a 3D softcore movie actually outgrossed Avatar in Hong Kong?
I heard this.
The new film, 3D Sex and Zen Extreme Ecstasy, and don't worry, the trailer I'm about to play is safe for work. This is not porn. Basically, opened in Hong Kong and just shattered Avatar's records.
Yeah.
And I just love the fact that their little logo that's playing here is even like, look at me, we're in 3D! Now, for those who haven't seen any of the Sex and Zen films, they're period set soft core. I don't even know how to describe them. They're kind of like their usual kung fu movies, but they have all this erotica mixed into them. They're kind of very odd films. But this one was basically made for 3D. I'll be very curious to actually... I'd love to see it in 3D. I doubt we'll ever see it in 3D in this country.
Yeah, you think?
We'll probably get this straight to DVD. Although it'll probably show up in Blu-ray 3D.
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. Or you might be able to import it, Dave.
There you go. There's a shot for you.
There's some interesting little 3D spectaculars there.
What's the point?
What was that about? I want to watch it just because I'm confused as hell at what's going on.
And let's face it, it's going to have 3D boobies. So, you know, what's not to like about 3D? There we go, more 3D.
I love it's like, check out the awesome 3D.
Look at the awesome 3D. Yeah. It's like knives flying everywhere. And later on, there's we won't play the whole trailer right now, but later on there's actually a shot of a girl, she's reaching out to camera like this.
It's so indulgent.
You just sit there and go, really? You're really going to go that way, are you? All right. Just as a public service announcement, I guess, or keeping people up to date, the second episode of Mortal Kombat Legacy came out.
We saw it last
and
night.
And it is better.
I actually haven't
too short. That's my only problem.
Like
9
minutes.
What the hell?
I haven't actually had a chance to see the latest episode yet. I embedded it on the site. You can find it on geekgadget.com.
It's only 9 minutes this time.
It's best to watch one and then two, because it kind of just completes episode one. It's not really a second episode.
I think it's going to end up being
half-hour episode.
It'll be a movie on Blu-ray.
That's what
or
I said.
Like,
yeah, I think what those are weird at all.
But
one.
It all sticks together. Like it doesn't start
scene for scene.
Yeah. And
it's
to
not
be honest,
episodic.
It pisses you off a little bit because a minute and a half of it's taken up by the "this is what happened last time," and you're like, just hurry up. But look, yeah, so far, Celine, put it best. Badass. Totally.
Okay, we have a choice of two Red Band trailers here. Now, we're running out of time, so we don't have time for both, but we'll play one of them. Two
30
Red
minutes
Band.
Or less.
All right, 30 minutes or less has been called. Two Red Band trailers have come out this week for new comedies. One has got Jason Bateman and Ryan Reynolds called The Change Up,
right.
Which is kind of like a saucy, you know, one's a single guy, one's a married guy.
Oh,
and
God.
They swap bodies, basically.
God. Right. Yes.
The second one is a Red Band trailer for the new film from the director of Zombieland. Now, he's gone and done this film starring Jesse Eisenberg again.
Yes.
And it's called 30 Minutes or Less. And I'm not even going to try and describe this film. I'm going to let you watch it, and then
you decide.
Then you can tell me what you think of this.
The thing is, Kate makes some pretty questionable decisions, like moving to Atlanta.
Whatever, why are we talking about my sister?
I don't know.
You want to fuck my sister, don't you?
Okay, your sister is attractive.
My twin sister? Which is basically like fucking me?
You remember graduation night?
You fucked Tina Scotto.
No, I was actually having the best night of my life with your sister.
What? You deflowered my sister? And I know all the fucking details?
Hello? Hello, pizza boy.
Oh, it's a great mask. Ah, another one. I wish I can get stoned too.
Get him!
Whoa. No, dude, just take the pizza.
Oh, man. What do you want?
We gotta talk.
We have nothing left to say to each other.
Two guys in masks strapped me and strapped a bomb to my chest, and now I have less than 9 hours to rob a bank.
You're hysterical. Great joke. What the fuck? Is that thing real? And your first thought was to come to a school filled with young children?
Sometimes fate pulls out its big old cock and slaps you right in the face.
Painting the guns, painting the guns, painting the guns for the bank robbery. Cause we go in with our plastic guns and the cops will shoot us in our faces.
Painting our guns, painting our guns.
That looks great. I'm so doing that one.
I'm glad we made that choice. I'll put the change up embedded on the site, so if anybody wants to see that one. That's actually got some funny lines, too. I think the part where, just in the trailer, in the change up, there's a part where Jason Bateman comes running out of the other room, naked, holding his balls in his hand, basically going, "I've got freckles on my taint, how cool is that?" Because they're examining each other's bodies, of course. So,
no.
It's kind of funny in its own right, but that is actually the better of the two. And that Indian actor in that one is apparently a huge, huge comedian at the moment in America. I have never heard of him before.
Yeah,
so.
I've seen some of his stuff. I don't like his stand-up, but he has a good place in film.
Mm. Right. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, well, let's...
He was, because he was also in Funny People.
He was too.
Yeah.
That's why he looked familiar to me.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to move on to our list of five, and then we're going to get out of here because we are running long. We weren't supposed to be running this long. All right. This week's list of five is five comic books we want to see on screen. And as we said at the head of the show, there's been a lot of comic book adaptations lately, and there's still more to come. But are there any out there that we still want to see on screen where we can sit there and go, you know, I really want to see the adaptation of this? And so we thought we would honor that list and see how we go. You guys, are you guys doing joint lists or individuals?
No, individuals.
Individuals. All right, Celine, start us off.
My number one is, although it has been rumored time and time again, whether or not it'll come to screen, my number one is Preacher, and I want to see it done properly.
Interesting, I didn't put it on my list because I'm getting to the point where I don't want to see it on screen because I'm scared.
Yeah, no, but that's what I mean.
Yeah.
This is a kind of, I want to see it on screen because I want to see them do it right.
Yes. Mm.
And I would love to see them do it right.
I agree. If they could do it right, I would love to see the film.
Because
that.
It's such ridiculous source material. If they could pull that off.
Yeah, especially the first what is it, the first volume or whatever it is.
That, I reckon the first volume would almost make a full movie.
That's it, yeah.
I'm just going to put
or
that
even
out
as like a TV miniseries, like a HBO-style Deadwood kind
and
of
And we'll actually put a caveat to this list and basically say we're not necessarily even talking about just film at this point. So heroes on screen.
Yep.
We'd like
well,
to
funnily them. Enough, I've actually made that as a stipulation for my first entry.
Okay, your first one.
My
number
first
five.
Entry is I want to see DC do one of their DVD creations of The Killing Joke. Which
damn
is
straight.
My favorite, which is my favorite Batman story of all time. And
oh, that's
I
right.
Think,
we start at five, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh,
start one.
Well, yeah, yeah. Start one.
We got what you mean. But, yeah, like, the reality for me is that I've always wanted to see someone adapt that really dark Batman source material and do it right.
And that may actually happen because I actually heard, and I've seen screenshots for one of them, so one is definitely happening. Bruce Timm's team is have actually done a DVD animated film version of Batman Year One, which will be really good. And they're also apparently working on The Dark Knight Returns, which I also love. So The Killing Joke can't be far away.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
But I agree. That as an animated feature would be fantastic.
Awesome.
My number five, funnily enough, is a Marvel comic, Alpha Flight. I've always loved Alpha Flight because they're just kind of like the second tier Avengers. It's like,
oh,
they're,
wow, cool.
Each one of them has powers. Like, instead of having the Hulk, they've got Sasquatch and, you know, and all this. But this is also where Wolverine started at. I mean, so Wolverine was basically found by Alpha Flight after the Weapon X program. But the thing that would get me the most about Alpha Flight, the reason why I want to see Alpha Flight, is they're Canadian. Can you imagine how good the accents would be?
That's great. Yeah, no, that's awesome.
I would love to see the Canadian superheroes kick into action. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Selene, your number four.
Okay, well, I will actually go for my number four, which is Powers by Brian Michael Bendis, which is a fantastic comic book about police who kind of police superheroes, and the superheroes are real life. It's set in a very, very realistic New York City, grungy, the superheroes are all like movie stars, and these two cops are cops that investigate the death of a superhero.
Sounds like a better version of The Boys.
It is a much better version of The Boys. Yeah. I love The Boys, but I got to Herogasm, if anyone's familiar with The Boys, and they lost me.
Yeah.
What's the name of this comic?
The Boys. Powers by Brian Michael Bendis.
I've got to look for this one. Sounds good.
It's, and I would really recommend it. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I'm taking notes.
And it's sort of like, and it's a male-female combo, and it's sort of, their relationship's really interesting, and the relationship between the superheroes is really interesting too. It's a great comic.
I've always wanted somebody to do The Boys right, because The Boys is like literally a comic done by the people that I think are like the people that we don't like at school, like the jocks. It's like the jocks version of a comic where it's just all tits, ass, and violence.
Yeah.
Whereas that sounds like what
this
I wanted
is
it to be.
This is much more intelligent, much more adult stuff. And for the record, my number five was The Darkness. I'd like to see that properly done on film.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I'd like to see The Darkness.
For the record, because I started at one.
That's fine. So we know what your number one is.
Yeah. We can get there. We'll get there.
All right, Josh, your number four.
My number four is Superman Red Son.
Ah!
It'll never happen. It's never going to happen because it's too much against everything that
is
Americana.
How about you save comment on that, because it's coming up on my list and we'll jump in on that one. We'll jump in on that one together, okay? Because I agree with you 100%. My number four is Why the Last Man. Now, they've talked about this for a long time. I would actually do this as a miniseries. I wouldn't do this as a film. It's too much for a film.
Definitely.
And I wouldn't want to lose the detail in it. But if they could pull Why the Last Man off well...
I hope this project comes about, and I've said it before, I really actually, and God, it hurts, but I really hope that they do choose Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, I think so. I think Shia LaBeouf would be a good choice.
He's the perfect inadequate male.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the character
that's
of
Yorick.
And if
is
the producers of
male.
This are listening, because they are talking about producing this, Keanu Reeves is not right.
Yep. No,
all right?
Keep that man away from it.
Stay
keep
away.
That man
all he can
away
do
from
is stand there and do nothing.
Yeah.
And go, whoa.
I would actually go so far as to say that I think Natalie Portman would make a good hero.
She'd make a good anything.
Well, that's true. Anyway, so yeah, Why the Last Man, definitely. If you haven't read it, it is a 50-something issue limited series, and it is fantastic. Really well worth it. Even my wife read it, and she thought it was great.
Yeah, so it's a really great series.
It's a really good story. Your number three.
My number three is a tricky one. I don't know if it should be on my list or not, because three films of it have already been made. And I'm talking about the particular comic that I mean is the Punisher Max series written by Garth Ennis. An absolutely brutally dark comic book series. And the most recent Punisher film was actually kind of, but not really, but sort of was, I don't know if the director fucking knew what the fuck she was doing with it, tried to do an adaptation of that. And visually, they got it 100%, and I was amazed when I saw it. But the storyline was so childish and so nonchalant and so forgettable that I hated the film.
Yeah, but it was also because they also based it on, quite funnily enough, Punisher Warzone was actually based on Punisher Warzone, which was that miniseries as well. So it was a mess.
The Max series is absolutely brutal. Like, they deal with, like, child prostitution, sex trafficking,
when Punisher
drug
is
lords.
Best.
Like, this is by Garth Ennis, and Dark Material is his, where he shines at the best.
Do you know what? The best Punisher film that has come out so far is actually not a Punisher film, but the best Punisher film was a film that came out in, I think it was 1979, 1980, called The Exterminator. And you look at that and you just that's the Punisher. Yeah. That's what it should have been.
Well, the thing is, I didn't even mind the Tom Jane one, but it was so airy-fairy. And then this, they tried to go really dark and hardcore, and visually they had it right. The lighting was right. Ray Stevenson cast as the Punisher. Fuck yeah. And then they had this wanky Jigsaw's the bad guy storyline, and they tried to put in Barracuda as well, and it just fucking sucked.
Now, I did actually read a story the other day online that actually said that Marvel is in negotiation at the moment with Lionsgate to actually buy back the Punisher.
And they want to do their own Marvel.
They
want to
do their own
Punisher.
Dude, and you know what?
Looks
no
like
fan,
the Punisher out
exactly.
of the Max series.
No fan says that he was the thing that was wrong with that
film. Yeah, no. If you talk to fans,
he was fine. It was the script that was the problem.
The script was terrible, and the plot was a mess.
And the acting from everybody else.
Even from the dude who played Jigsaw, who is fantastic, who was in The Wire, even his acting in this film
He was terrible in that film.
Yeah, I don't know what was happening with that. But yeah, that's my number three.
Yeah, now I'd like to see Punisher. Punisher is actually a really, really complex character in the comic books, and it's very easy just to kind of fluff him up and not do anything with him properly.
Yeah.
I think I liked the Thomas Jane film, but it's not the Punisher.
No. Yeah.
You know? And if you took the name Punisher off of it and just called it something else, it would have actually been an okay film. I agree. And if this is true, if Marvel is trying to buy back Punisher to do their own Punisher film, I'm kind of in on that.
Mm. It needs to be dark. I want to see an R-rated Punisher film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want them to do it right.
If it goes back to Marvel, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be cute.
Yeah, well, it would be interesting if they, because Marvel's take lately of the Punisher in the comics has been pretty bleak.
Garth Ennis. Garth Ennis is bleak, and then you rape it up the ass, and then you shoot it in the head.
No, I'm talking about for doing a Marvel film version of it, because they've actually been going in for some very dark places with that character as a book.
Not dark enough, though. That's what I mean. That's why I'm saying Punisher Max series, because it is actually one of the most brutal comic book series I've ever read.
And again, it's a list that we're saying these are what we want.
Yeah, this is just a hypothetical. It's never going to happen.
Okay, you're number three.
My number three was Why the Last Man as well.
Why the Last Man? Okay, I think we're all in agreement that Why the Last Man is one of
the It's
needs
not
to
on my
done.
List because I saw it on his list. Yeah. So
My number three is Irredeemable, which is a comic book that I came into late, but I'm now caught up and I absolutely fucking love. For those who don't know what it is, it's from Boom Comics. It's an indie label. And basically the idea is that there's a superhero who basically is an analog for Superman. He has all the powers of Superman, basically. He can fly, godlike, comes from another planet, the whole bit. But one day, turns around and realizes that he is better than everybody else, and he can't stand the whole world, and he feels like he's been betrayed. So he goes on a killing rampage and basically starts to level cities and destroy the entire globe. And it's up to all the other superheroes, who are all basically analogs of real superheroes, but of course not DC, who are out to try and stop this man from going bad, basically. One worst fear would be that this man would one day turn around and say, I don't want to be a good guy anymore, becomes real.
Yeah,
and
that's a cool concept.
It's a phenomenal piece of writing. And there is actually a follow-up book that comes out as well called Incorruptible, which is set in the same time period where a supervillain decides, with all the chaos that's going on in the world, he needs to become good. Yeah. And so he starts to try...
You want to chuck that on a USB and send it my way?
They are fantastic comics and well worth having a look at if you haven't read them. So, do check out Irredeemable. And I think Irredeemable would make an amazing movie.
It sounds amazing.
It's like the anti-Superman. Mm. It really is.
And yes, Delta Knight, it does sound like Megamind, but it's like the adult version of Megamind.
And it's not done for humor. It's not done for laughs.
Yeah.
The death and destruction. I mean, he levels a city at one point and literally kills a million people in one go, and everybody's like, holy crap, you know? All right, so Celine, your number two.
My number two is Transmetropolitan.
Which is also my number two.
Which
so we'll
I was,
this.
Yeah, I was not surprised that it wasn't on your, that was on your list. Mm. Absolutely fantastic comic.
I'm writing it down, I haven't read it.
I don't know if anyone would be able to put it to film. Because
I think
just casting him is going to be difficult.
Well, no, it would involve quite a bit of work and quite a bit of forethought, but you could easily get Johnny Depp to reprise his role basically as Hunter Thompson, which is who the character in it is based
Spider
on.
Spider-Jerusalem, the main character from
And you'd have to do a bit of script work because there are a lot of aspects to it that wouldn't work as a film concept because a lot of it does prattle on and there's a lot of conversation
but
in
he's
it,
also
but
just so undesirable as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. And you've got to get the dialogue right, but it's not the kind of thing that would sell for everyone, but it's the kind of thing that would make a great comic. And it's kind of written for people that don't like
people. I haven't read this one. So,
people who don't like anything.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's a great comic book series. That's why we love it. It's a great comic book series. And I'd love to see it done right to film, but I wouldn't want anyone to touch it because I don't think anyone could do it well.
It's kind of how I feel about
Preacher. It's sort of like, I'd love them to do it. Yeah, same thing with Preacher. I'd love it to be done, and I love it to be done right, but I don't think anyone can do it right.
Exactly.
So I'm sort of
so
like,
it's
stay
that
away,
kind of thing you
it.
Want it. You want it done, but you
don't
ever want to see
exactly.
that title headline that says Transmetropolitan in production because then you begin to worry.
Yeah. All right, Josh, your number two.
No, that was my number
two. Oh, that's your number two.
So
my number two is a Marvel comic called Cloak and Dagger that was out, it was quite big in the 80s. Basically, it's two homeless kids who have superpowers. One can generate light and one is pure darkness. And they basically have a symbiotic relationship where she feeds him because of her light into his darkness. And it's a really, really dark, really interesting tale because they're not superheroes in the true sense of the words. They're kind of like street kids who happen to stumble along a lot of stuff. Much more of the Marvel line of Hell's Kitchen sort of stuff, you know, the Daredevil line where they're kind of in the darker, seedier side of New York.
They took those two characters, didn't they, for Heroes. Because there was the sister-brother relationship.
A little bit. They kind of copied it in that. Cloak and Dagger have actually...
Which was shit, by the way.
Yeah. Cloak and Dagger have been kicking around the Marvel world for a long time. They had, their own book for a long time. And they still show up today. They're in Civil War, the big Marvel Civil War epic that was there. Cloak and Dagger were around. And so it's... I think they're interesting enough characters that they could do something with them.
And an honorable mention to Civil War for me, I think that would be also interesting to see.
That would be the biggest budget film ever made.
or a biggest budget miniseries.
Yeah. Civil War, for those who don't know, is Marvel had a moment. Both of the major houses do this once in a while where they have these epic stories where it's like cleaning house, where they have
old
superheroes they don't need anymore, or they want to inflate other superheroes, or they want to change things around. They do these grand scope things like Civil War where it literally bleeds into every other book, and then they have a miniseries in the middle of it, and it gives them license to shuffle the entire deck up, basically.
It means that you don't end up with stale comics, because basically it kills off people that aren't doing their work.
We had Crisis on Infinite Earths, or Crisis on Infinite Worlds for DC.
Infinite Crisis.
We've had Secret Wars 1 and 2, Civil War, more recently Siege for the Marvel world. They're always kind of doing these big epic scope things to clean the house. Civil War, though, was a remarkable, because it literally had all the heroes turn against each other and taking sides. Yep. And Punisher was played heavily in Civil War. Very interesting watching him go toe-to-toe with Captain America.
Yeah.
Very good. Now, we're at number one. You've already said
my
Preacher.
My number one was Preacher.
Absolutely, I agree with you. It's not on my list because purely I'm just scared of it. Your number one?
We recently discussed this, but my number one is the Adam Ant that is possibly being made into a film right now.
Not Adam Ant-Man.
Ant-Man. Sorry, Ant-Man. And Ant-Man is a fucking hilarious comic book that needs a film thing. Like, it's Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright is the perfect man
to do this film. These are comic books about the guy that has the power but doesn't want to be a hero, and that does sound like a relatively regurgitated idea, but he's kind of like that stoner friend that doesn't really want to do anything with his life. This is the essence of him. But it's not just the character himself, it's the world they create around him. The chaos that ensues behind this character is just hilarious. Well, He's not always involved.
No, and I love the fact that the character stole the Ant-Man costume.
Because
the Ant-Man comic that we're talking about is not Hank Pym. It's not the Ant-Man Jacket who became Giant Man from the Avengers.
Yeah.
This is some guy who kind of gets a suit, and he is so funny.
Yeah, he's just hilarious. And yeah, no, absolutely. I think that would be the best idea we could ever come up with for a comic, because it's just, we've put so many out and we're doing this really serious run of all these comic book movies and we're doing a great job. There needs to be an antidote to it before someone starts parodying it.
Yes, absolutely. all right, my number one is Superman Red Sun. This is why I said we'll come back.
Yeah.
Superman Red Sun is a miniseries that came out written by Mark Miller.
Mm.
And it basically posited a what-if story. What if Superman landed in Russia instead of America, and being raised by good Russian farmers and, you know, the communist ideal and all, how would he have been different?
Yeah.
And it is a sensational book. Mm. It is amazing because it just shows you, it's that whole argument of nature versus nurture. And it's this whole idea that under a very different ideal, Superman becomes a very different person.
Yeah.
It's a great read. And if you haven't read it, go out and read it. This is the ultimate version of Superman I would like to see put on screen, and it will never happen.
Yeah.
Ever.
Absolutely not.
But it is well worth having a read, but God, if they could put that on film.
That's a pity about all of our comics on our list, is that they're all too dark to come to film. Yeah. That's kind of why we want to see them on film, because they are just so brutal or disgusting or so adult that no director would touch them.
Like, realistically, when comic books become an accepted media, and hopefully, like, my God, honest hope is that The Avengers does work, and if this was to happen, there will be this opening, this niche for films, like an independent comic book cinema.
Yeah.
And when we get that, we'll see where these comics come into it.
And it'll be interesting to see what gets picked up and what doesn't get picked
up. I've actually got two honorary mentions I thought I'd throw out there as well. One of them I actually know is in pre-production.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually Nemesis, written by Mark Miller as well, which is basically about the ultimate supervillain who goes around just pitting himself against people. And it is a really interesting read. The miniseries is now finished, and apparently Tony Scott is apparently attached to Nemesis.
Which is the most interesting thing he has done in ages.
So I think that could be kind of interesting. And the other one that I think could be fun is Kirkman, who writes The Walking Dead, also does a superhero comic book called Invincible, which is a lot of fun and could make for a very interesting film. And there's a lot of story there. So there's a lot of story there to mine. It's 70-something issues so far and still going. So
there's also, like, there's stuff that has just been done wrong, like Daredevil. I'd love to see the Frank Miller version of Daredevil done. Or a proper version of the Fantastic Four, please. Can we just get rid of Jessica Alba? I don't know.
The scariest part of it all is that they are rebooting Daredevil. They're rebooting Fantastic Four.
Won't be done right.
No,
that's all.
Not until they're handed back to Marvel.
Fox.
So there are so many comics out there that have been adapted into film that have just failed dismally.
I just feel like Marvel needs to go, with all the money that they're making and not paying their actors, as we know they don't pay their actors very much, I think what they really need to do is go on a buying spree. They need to go and buy back some of their product.
All the rights to,
they're never going to be able to afford to buy back Spider-Man. Sony makes more money out of that.
The ultimate version of Fantastic Four is absolutely brilliant. And their relationship in the Civil War thing, what's her name, pretty much divorces.
Well, Civil War is really interesting because it really raises that whole, what do people really believe in, you know?
Which is what's fantastic about the Civil War. And it's sort of like the Fantastic Four can be actually quite a serious,
it's not
adult.
Well, it's actually not the campy crap that was put on screen.
Exactly, which is such a pity because they had so much source material to work
they did,
from.
So
they just ignored it all.
So, let's Marvel buy back some of these smaller properties.
And I just want to say quietly to Kellisynth, you're saying that you're really worried about the rebooting of Batman. I'm sorry, dude, but if we hadn't have had a reboot of Batman, we wouldn't have the Batman we have now.
That's right.
So yeah. Don't be afraid until we've seen what horrible things they're doing. And I won't be worried until I see Shia LaBeouf has been cast as Batman.
And let's just add one little subnote to that, which is Christopher Nolan, Christian Bale are not returning to Batman after The Dark Knight Rises. Mm. Okay, they've already said that. This is their last run at it. So, you know Warner Brothers is going to make another Batman films. These films make a great deal of money. Mm. So you ask yourself this. Would you rather they reboot it with new actors and new directors and take it in a different direction or somebody try and copy Christopher Nolan's style?
Exactly. Mm.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's better off rebooting.
I don't so much mind reboots as long as it's done with heart and as long as it's done with a capable director who wants to make a good film, not just a comic book adaptation. Yeah. It's about it being a good film.
I'm still not even scared about the Spider-Man reboot at this stage.
Yeah, the last Spider-Man movie was shit. Fucking reboot it all you want.
No, when the series dries up, all we've got left to do is reboot it. You don't want to keep flogging the same horse.
I have trouble sometimes wondering about the amount of rebooting we're doing. Like with Spider-Man as an example, Spider-Man's a perfect one where we sit there and go, they didn't really need to reboot it. They could have recast the actor and just put another director in and continued the story.
The Spectacular Spider-Man, so...
Amazing Spider-Man.
It depends how people interpret it. When it becomes franchised and when it becomes a character that has so many different adaptations and so many different interpretations, you can do whatever you want with it.
And as a counterpoint to what you were saying, Dave, the reality is, reboots, and we keep going back to the origin story and stuff like that, but it's the same reason that Thor is an origin story, because you need to fall in love with the person. You need to want them to do good things or bad things or whatever before they start going out and do it. If you just throw someone into a suit, it's the same reason every time we reboot Doctor Who, we have to have an origin story. We have to have him come back to stat because we have to want him to be that character. Yeah. And without that, there's no reason to go back to the series.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. No, anyway, that's fair. That's my 2 cents.
All right, let's wrap this puppy up. We've got to get ourselves out of here. You've got a train to catch, I believe.
Yes.
So just to remind everybody, though, that after this, after the music has played out here today, Little Geek will be joining us in the studio, so don't run away straight away. Mm. Little Geek's coming up here to give us his opinions on Thor. I just made the assumption that it's a superhero thing. Maybe we should find out what a kid would think of it, because it's for him as well. And so I thought we'd bring him up here. So hang around for that. If you agree or disagree with anything that we've had to say today, send us an email at feedback@geekactually.com or drop us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167, or you can always send it to our Skype ID, which is Geek Actually. Now, get merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, do any of those sorts of things. Anything, if you want to socially connect with us, go to geekactually.com.
You know where to find us.
Geekactually.com. There's a big follow us thing on the side. Click on that and you'll see all the links to everything that we do.
Awesome.
It's awesome. Do check out our other show, which is our weekly geek out, I guess you'd call it, where we sit down and we talk a little bit about tech. And this week, of course, Josh gave us a bit of a review on the 3DS and his new Galaxy Tab.
Brand new, we bought it this morning.
I know. Box is sitting right here. So please check that out. Look for Geek Actually on iTunes, or of course, you can always find all the back episodes by going to geekactually.com. You might want to check out a few of our friends. WeekendRonan.com is the home of the Real Junkies, R-E-E-L. You can find them also on iTunes by searching for them. They are another movie podcast like us. They drink a lot of tequila. They're great guys. Go check them out. Rachel over at the Funky Film Show, dude, love you. Thursdays on Radio Fremantle, 107.9 FM, or you can catch back episodes on RadioFremantle.com. Josh, I believe you have something you want to push?
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. You should go check it out. There is a bunch of awesome stuff, including an interview, which I did recently myself. It was a great situation. Dungeon Siege 3, the game is a lot better than people think it's going to be. Go and check that out. Also, if you have 2 seconds, DLC Live Video, throw that into iTunes under the store and actually just go over and rate us. And while you're there, you might as well rate Dave's shows as well.
Please do.
It always helps. But DLC Live Video is a brand new show. We are releasing the video versions of the shows we do currently, and it really, really helps if we can get some grunt behind that, because we can get on the front page of New and Noteworthy, which means more people, more fun, and more people in the chat room every Tuesday night.
Fantastic. And Celine, how can people find out more about you?
I'm on Facebook, or you can visit my website. That's www.godhaspinkhair.com. That's actually my artist's website. So please do check it out. Comment on my work or whatever. If you do add me on Facebook, please tell me where you found me. Don't just add me, because if I get James from Colorado, hey, I went to high school with you, I generally ignore them. So if you add me, I'm just going to think you're some really weird, like, random pervert or something.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I'll just ignore you. So cool. Say I saw
Geeks,
you on
we
Geek.
We do come across as perverts. Yeah. Remember that. So, like all of us.
Yes, but please do check out my website. And I'm constantly posting up on that as well. So chuck it in your taskbar there.
Fantastic. Well, we also have two more. Very quickly, Josh Spencer does our cartoon cover arts. He's fantastic. Find him at attackninja.blogspot.com. And the little geek will give him his plug at the end when he actually comes in, because he's coming in for once. So we don't need to do it right now. I just wanted to say very quickly, though, that we are still trying to raise some money for Little Geek's iPad 2 for his birthday in June. Thanks to all those who have donated so far. If you are interested in throwing $5, $10, whatever you can spare, there's a donations link right on the front of geekactually.com. We are desperately trying to get him an iPad 2 for his birthday, because that's what he would really like, but we can't afford it on our own. So help us out if you can, and your name will go onto the birthday card. Now, we don't have music from Thor, unfortunately. Boo. We normally go out with a piece of soundtrack from the film, but the soundtrack, because we got the film 2 weeks earlier than America, the soundtrack hasn't been released yet. The soundtrack is actually coming out in May. So what I've done for our closing music today is I've actually dug up a piece of the score from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is also directed by Kenneth Branagh, and the music is done by Patrick Doyle, who did the soundtrack for Thor. And the music is actually kind of on the same theme, wavelength. So the track is called The Creation. So we're going to get our asses out of this studio. We're going to say thank you, Celine. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, chat room. Thank you, listeners. And go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will talk to you. Oh, no, we won't talk to you next week. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks, because there's no show next week. Bye, all.
Adios.
Bye. Okay, I'm now here with Nicholas the Little Geek McVeigh. How are you, Nicholas?
I'm really good today.
We thought we'd bring you on because this was a big geek film. Not big geek as in big geek, but big geek as in enormous. And we thought, well, you know what? We need to get your opinion on this, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the chat room's hung around. So if you guys have got questions or anything you want to throw out to Nicholas, feel free to do that. This is recorded directly after the film actually show for those who are listening to the audio podcast. So we're still going. We're still on a roll. So the big question is, what did you think of Thor?
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was it about the film itself that you really enjoyed?
I really enjoyed all the actors. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed the story a lot, and I really liked how they handled Asgard and everything.
Yeah, I thought the Asgard stuff was really good. So did you buy into that world?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and bigger question, because we talked about it on the main show, which was, were you ever confused about the switching between Asgard and Earth?
No, I wasn't.
No, that's good. No. That's good. So the storyline holds itself up. Celine's still sitting across the room from us. So there you go, Celine. That still holds up. So what did you think of Chris Hemsworth as Thor?
I thought he did a really good job. I actually thought he was going to sound very Australian, but he wasn't. He wasn't really.
No, thank God they actually they managed to calm that accent down.
Yeah.
And what else? Did you buy into the relationship between Thor and the Natalie Portman character of Jane Foster? Did you believe that relationship?
Yeah.
Because there was, I actually read something the other day that actually said that
when he got hit by cars.
There was something that they said I was reading an article the other day that said they felt it all happened a little too fast. Do you feel that way?
No.
No?
No.
No, I thought it actually flowed along. Yes, I thought him being hit by cars. We were saying this in the main show. He gets basically beaten up a lot in the first couple of days.
I like how when they're trying to take his blood, and then he says, "How dare you hurt the thunder god of Asgard?"
Yes, that was very. All right, so bigger question: were you impressed by the 3D at all?
Oh, I thought it was really good post-conversion.
Yeah, I thought the post-conversion was great too. Yeah. So, does it give you hope of other post-conversions coming out?
Yeah.
And bigger question, are you now excited for Captain America?
Yeah.
I think Captain America is going to be a lot of fun. It's not going to have quite the fantastical realm that this had, but I think overall Thor is for all ages. There's a little bit of violence in it, but I don't think it's didn't freak you out at all, did it? No. And what did you think of the Frost Giants?
The Frost Giants looked really cool.
They did, didn't they? They were really cool. I really liked them a lot. All right, so I know you're biting at the bit to tell people about it, so and we've got a few extra minutes, so why don't you tell us about what you're working on?
At the moment, I'm working on lots of Lego Batman films.
Yep.
At this moment, I had actually finished the animation to my new Lego Batman short, Mr. Freeze.
Yep.
And I have also finished the script recently to I think a pretty long film. It's got it's 11 pages of scripting.
Wow, for Lego animation, that's an epic.
And it's called Smile. I don't know when it's going to be out because it's really long. Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm working
on. So, and you've been animating today or editing today?
Animating today. I actually been finishing up on the animation today because I tried a bit of green screen, but it didn't work.
Nicholas has been having some trouble with green screen because he doesn't have a real green screen. He's only been using like green cards and stuff like that. And he's having some real problems getting the color separation. We need to get you a green screen at some point. Nicholas is taking donations for a green screen and some decent lights if anybody wants to help him out. You've actually done some green screen. We actually got some to work the other day, but it's really kind of hard to get the separations happening. For those who don't know, Nicholas does stop motion animations using Lego characters and stuff, and you can find his stuff at youtube.com/NickyMcVeigh, and there's links to that from his own personal website, which you can find at www.NickyMcVeigh.com. Look, it's been great having you here. It's been great hearing your opinions on Thor. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really did.
And do you think other kids your age are going to get something out of it?
Yeah.
That may not be geeks?
One of my friends is actually not a geek. I mean, one of my friends is actually not a geek, and he actually really liked Iron Man, and I recommended Thor to him, and I wonder if he's going to watch it.
He might like it. If he liked Iron Man, he's going to like Thor. It's the same world, same universe. Nicholas, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk again soon, okay? Again, I guess the next time you're going to be on will be the next big geek film that we have coming out.
Yeah, and that's I think that's X-Men? No, it's Captain...
No, I think X-Men's up first, X-Men First Class, I think, is coming out in May. Although we'll probably get you on because there's a couple of Easter films you're going to see. All right, so we're not back for 2 weeks, as we've said before. So in the next show, we might tag Nicholas on at the end again because I believe we're going to go see Diary of a Wimpy Kid 2 at some point. And
I talked about the first one in my actual
review. Yeah, so I think we might come on and give the second review up for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all in 2 weeks. Bye now.
Bye, guys.
You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.